This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Miss Laurie. And what do you think? Another glorious Monday morning. Great
and
day.
Yes, it is.
Kind of cool.
A new month.
A new month. The 1st of November. Yes. All right. So listen, folks. You know, here we are once again. Another week of national news that's absolutely in the tank in so many different ways. I want to talk a little bit about that. And then I do want to bring in Senator Chris Elliott to talk about the special session that began last Friday and is kicking off with all sorts of things happening this week. So he's going to come on about 10:15.
Okay.
And we'll have a good discussion about the special session, what's going on with it. I know it's about redistricting, and I think they were also supposed to deal with the distribution of COVID money. But there is an additional issue that we are pressing to have put on this special session agenda, which is some sort of protection for our citizens from this vaccine mandate. So I know that Senator Elliott has a bill, SB 9. Senator Orr has a bill, SB 13. We've talked about HB 31 that the House has. So it looks as though the House members are paying attention and the Senate members to what's going on. Just as a note, this past Thursday, 300 to 400 people showed up at Montgomery, paraded around the State House, and basically made noise, showing the legislators that people down here and up in North Alabama and Central Alabama, Southwest, Southeast, Alabamians want protection for their jobs, and they don't want to see these employers able to just say, you get the jab or you're gone. And unfortunately, that's happening. So I think it's an interesting time for us to talk about that with Senator Elliott, because like I said, he does have a bill that he sponsored. He's got, I think, 19 sponsors for it. So, but before we get to Senator Elliott, he'll be on about 10:15, let's talk a little bit about our national news. And, you know, where do you want to start? I do think it's important to start with Virginia. The Virginia race has tightened. It looks as though, in fact, it's gone in the direction of Youngkin. So now he's got an 8 percentage point lead in the polls. Like he says, you know, polls don't win elections, voters win elections. So, but the implications of what's going on there, I think, are important, because the Virginia revolt against the Democrat establishment and what they have done, particularly in education, is a benchmark point for us to think about. And why do I say that? It's really interesting how we're all applauding Virginia for standing up and going to their school boards and giving them hell, okay? And they are. And they deserve to be, these boards deserve to be given hell. And so there is this sense of revolt against CRT, against all the crap that they're teaching. Guess what, folks? We are complacent down here on these issues of Common Core. We have been trying to get rid of Common Core for 11 years. We may be successful. I'll talk about it next Monday. But there's a movement afoot now, and I've mentioned this before, that we have 4 votes on the state board to get rid of it. And we're going to see whether or not we can get the governor. And I'll talk more about that next time. But isn't it interesting? The people up in Virginia are pounding the streets, pounding on the desks of these you know, board members. Get rid of this stuff. And all we have is a bunch of educrats up in Montgomery who want it, who have kept Common Core. And our people, by all the polling measures, 70% of our people don't want Common Core. And yet, year after year after year, we keep it. We are going to change that. And just as we've seen what's happened in Virginia, I think that we will follow their lead there, and we'll see what's going on.
You have had victories, though, with the mask mandates in our local school systems,
as well as
the critical race theory.
And yes, that's all true. There's no question about that, and that's all to the good. But while those things have happened, trying to move the needle on Common Core has gone nowhere. I mean, the other, I think, important victory we did have was defeating Amendment 1, which would have taken, you know, your ability to elect your school board, state board members, and it would have been, you know, a selected by the governor board of education, which would have been a disaster. So, I mean, the Virginia revolt is great. Let's hope it bears fruit, and we can really see the results of that with a young Youngkin win, which would set the stage, according to all the pundits, for the GOP to win back, you know, the House and possibly the Senate in 2022. But let me just give you all this warning, okay? We've been down this road before. 2010, the Tea Party came alive, and we gave, you know, the House back to the Republicans, and, you know, gave back the Senate in 2014 to stop Obama and what he was doing. That didn't go anywhere, okay? And then when Trump gets elected, it's the Republicans in the House who didn't have a bill to get rid of Obamacare sitting on the shelf, pull it to him, give it to Trump, and say, sign it, President. No. I mean, you see, this is the problem with them, okay? It's the Liz Cheney problem, okay? But be that as it may, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, this whole question of the continuing rise of prices. Gas is up 42%, energy 25%, used cars and trucks. Have you tried to buy a used car? Guess what? They can't produce the new ones because they're all relying on these chips. There ain't no chips. So people are buying the old cars and old trucks. 24% up there. Food's up 4.6%, which doesn't sound like much.
It is more than that.
It's more than that, probably, okay? But this is what they're officially saying, okay? So what I'm suggesting to you here is that the combination of Biden's inability to run the country successfully is creating problems for him. He is underwater in every one of these conditions, okay? And I would argue that the degree to which Biden's continuing slide in the polls is going to have a definite positive impact for our people in Virginia. It helps Youngkin, but it also creates a very real possibility that, you know, by 2022 with the elections, the independents especially, who really helped elect Biden, have walked away from him. And that is a major factor in the hope that we have that the Republicans can regain the majority.
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here at WABF with Dr. Lou.
I was getting a call there, and I thought it might have been Senator Elliott. I told him to call me if he was having trouble calling in here, but it wasn't from him, so it's okay. All right, so we have these kinds of issues there in terms of domestic issues. How about this one? Merrick Garland got pilloried at the Senate hearings last week. I mean, all of the key Republican people who we really respect, Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, all of them, just demanded he resign. Because of why? Because he essentially sicked the FBI on parents who were protesting in Virginia. Here again, we get back to this whole, the National Association of School Boards, they concoct this argument that there's a terrorist threat, and Merrick Garland acts on it in cahoots with the White House. All right, so now we've got all of these parents with legitimate concerns now being classified as domestic terrorists. It's an outrage, and it has to stop, and hopefully it will stop. We'll see what happens with that. Well, let's go to Biden and foreign policy. I mean, you know, he's over in Europe at the, you know, the climate. It's a climate exchange, climate conference. I mean, look, they've had 25 of these climate conferences. They've really gone nowhere. The Paris Accords were all, you know, feel-good type things that happened. They all, you know, came out with these wonderful goals of X number of emissions, you know, that had to be adopted by, you know, 2030. And of course, there was no enforcement mechanisms there. And frankly, I don't want any enforcement mechanisms. It's all BS anyway. But the point is, they keep talking about this. But now they're talking about it with a little bit more seriousness behind it. You've got Biden and his progressive, you know, cohorts, AOC and them, talking about climate change as a major factor. And the argument basically here is that, you know, we're going to be leading the world in the do-good climate change approach, okay? So the climate change bill that they're trying to pass, it started off at, you know, $3.5 trillion. It's down to about $1.5, which is no small amount of money. But the fact of the matter is, they are stuck with that, okay? So my point here is that, to a very large degree, the worst polluters, China and Russia, are not doing anything about all of that. They are going to continue to pollute. China is building more coal-fired plants for power, going after more coal, which, you know, here again, that's all fine and dandy, but there's technological ways for them to clean that coal up. That might be a solution to all of this, but you know, they're interested in doing is producing more power so they can continue to grow their economy. And of course, the third world wants the first world to pay for all of the problems that they have encountered as a result of so-called climate change, which means a massive welfare, you know, redistribution, exactly what this is. They've wanted this for at least the last 15 years in the United Nations. So there's nothing new about claims that we're supposed to pay these third world countries for their own corruption and their lack of being able to do things. Again, the colonial legacy brought all this about, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to get into that in detail today, but let's just say it's a lot of hooey to a very large degree. And it's unfortunate that so many of these American progressives, and you know, that's a misnomer. These folks aren't progressive in any sense. Go back and look at what the progressive movement was all about at the turn of the 20th century, okay? They weren't socialist Marxists. And that's the reality that you have with these people today. My point being that the argument here is essentially going to be, can we hold on to doing what the right thing is in terms of providing opportunity for our people, opportunity for people in the world, without turning it into a Chinese authoritarian model? That's going to be the key issue. So we'll see how that goes. So, I mean, you know, from the standpoint of foreign policy, this question about climate change is important, but there's another aspect of this. There's this whole question about Taiwan. And I've mentioned this before. You've had, you know, Lieutenant Commander D. Cox on the radio with me. We've talked about the question of Taiwan. The real issue is, can the United States move in the direction to where we see that China is going to be deterred from taking military action against Taiwan? Now, think through this for a second. Taiwan represents a major threat intellectually and politically for the communist government. Here is supposedly a province of China, which it isn't. Taiwan has never been part of China. Okay, so let's get that straight. But the fact of the matter is, they have declared this. And of course, in our efforts to work with the Chinese during the Nixon administration, when Kissinger and Nixon, you know, wooed the Chinese into, actually, they didn't really have to woo them too hard because the Chinese were scared to death of the damn Russians who had just beaten their butts on the Yasuri River in 1969. So the predicate was laid for the Chinese to be, you know, very skeptical of what's going on with their erstwhile Russian allies, okay? So I do think that at this particular juncture, what's happening with China is that they feel emboldened. They see this administration under Biden, and all you have to do is look at the Afghanistan debacle, and you can understand why they think that this may be the time to go forward with some sort of nibble here, nibble there, and see what Biden does, knowing that if the first nibble is not reacted to, then what you're going to end up getting is not a nibble, but a full-scale attack. Now, can we deter that? Well, I mean, there are people who are basically saying that you've got a situation here where the reality is that we may very well not be able to deter them because they have a huge navy, larger than ours. So to a certain degree, the naval component to this means that we have to be very cautious about this. The other aspect of our inability perhaps to project power in the Taiwan area is the fact that the Chinese have developed a boatload of anti-ship missiles and other types of missiles that could very well neutralize our ability to see our fleet be deployed to help Taiwan. So taking all of this into account, the key issue then really becomes, what does an American administration have to do to present to the Chinese a sense that if you go too far, this is going to be the price you're going to pay for that? Again, the context of Biden's administration is, look at what they've done in Afghanistan. Look at other elements of their foreign policy. They have said nothing about China and the use of torture, genocide against the Uyghurs. Nothing. Nothing about what happened in Hong Kong, snuffing out the democratic freedoms that Hong Kong was guaranteed by the document that was signed with the Brits in the early 90s. It went nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. So, you know, my sense of this is that given the weakness that's inherent to the Biden administration, that in the end, we have got to be very careful about what's going on with the Chinese. Also understanding that you have a major problem with the Biden administration to see whether or not they're doing anything based on the fact that they are compromised with all of the money that they've been taking. These kinds of issues are significant, okay? So taken into as a whole, when you look at all this, it seems to me that if you're sitting in Xi's chair and looking at all this and wondering whether or not his own economy is going to be able to work through all of this, it seems to me that they may very well be tempted to go forward and do something with this as just a precaution on their own side that says, well, look, Biden is weak. We're strong right now. I know we're going to get stronger in a few years, but we could also risk, you know, having problems in our economy, which are there and very real. So maybe the calculation will be, let's take advantage of Biden and what's going on with him and his inability. And he's our Manchurian candidate. Oops, you know, oops.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take the risk? I mean, it seems to me that that is a reasonable operational theory from the Chinese standpoint. Why not? I mean, this isn't like with Trump, where, you know, like in his discussions with Kim Jong-un, I mean, he made it pretty clear. You're going to pay a strong price if you do anything stupid with your missiles. So that kind of strong, you know, peace rests on strength to a very large degree. Those kinds of signals are lacking with Biden. So what does it portend for the future? Well, I don't know. But I do know this, that this is dangerous, and the fact that he, Biden, has put us in this position is part and parcel of a liberal worldview in foreign policy. It goes right back to Obama, okay? He goes to the world in 2009 at Cairo and talks about how it's America that creates world's problems, okay? This has been the heart of the, quote, liberal critique. And that critique has been baked into the minds of these people who are running the government today, whether it's Blinken, Sullivan, Biden. It's dangerous. And the danger is that if we tempt the Chinese because of these very real weaknesses that we're portraying, they're damn well going to take advantage of it. And so here we are. Okay, friends, now Senator Elliott was going to be on this morning at 10:15.
We are not able to reach him.
Yeah, we're having problems. Now, I do know that he is driving to Montgomery, and he may be very well having some real problems with, you know, trying to get in touch with us on the road.
Well, that does give you more time to expand upon whatever you like.
Well, yes, of course. Now, always being prepared, not the Boy Scout motto, but the Marine Corps motto, okay?
Right.
I'm prepared to talk without Senator Elliott coming on the line. Okay?
While I was attempting to locate him and reach him for this program, I missed a bit of what you were talking about with Biden and China, but did you almost seem surprised that there's a problem with Biden when it comes to China? And what about the whole collusion and the whole conspiracy theory of the Bidens with China, being bribed by China? Where is that, Dr. Liu?
I'm not surprised at all. In fact, I did say something about that.
Okay.
But I do think that, you know, back in last October, not this past October, but 2020, I wrote an article for some of my people, that high school friends and all like that, basically arguing why you should not vote for Biden based on his foreign policy experience, okay? And you go down the list, okay? And Robert Gates talked about this, so there's authority, not just, oh, crazy Dr. Lunatic here, okay? All right. So talking about the fact that Biden has not been on the right side of too many foreign policy issues over his 45-year career. Okay, so that's the predicate by which you have to start with here, okay? And so the point where we are today is, if you see Biden as a foreign policy disaster in the making, then you shouldn't have voted for him, okay? But now, since a lot of these idiots voted for him, now we have to live with it, okay? So example number one before the judge here is basically, look at what happened with Afghanistan. A complete debacle, an unnecessary debacle. Except, okay, now this is where you have to start thinking, and maybe this is sort of conspiracy theory 101, okay? Maybe what they did was too stupid to be stupid, and it was all done deliberately. I'm becoming more and more convinced that that's exactly what it was, okay?
Part of the plan.
Yeah, part of the plan. Part of the plan to destroy America's energy independence. Part of the plan. who is so stupid as to cut back on energy production in this country, knowing full well that gas prices are going to go up? Who? They don't care. It's part of their plans to wean America away from fossil fuels, particularly on the gas side of things. So, in answer to Laurie's question, I think it's pretty clear that that's where we are with this. And I think that the fact of the matter is that, you know, Biden was a disaster in the making. And despite all of the things he said about being a unifier, blah, 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 that was all BS. And that's...
That was not Senator Elliott.
Oh, okay. That was all BS. And we've seen it. So when you take a look at his foreign policy, link it to what he's done in the past and what he's doing now, it makes perfectly good sense. So, Laurie, I hope that answers your question a little bit better.
Thank you.
All right, so let me quickly talk about what's going on with the special session, okay? I mentioned on Thursday about 300 to 400 people were up at the Capitol marching around the State House, okay? The fact of the matter is that we were there in order to do what? To send a message that we expect these legislators to get off their rear ends and do something to protect their constituents. Think about this. Our people are losing their jobs because employers are saying, get a jab or lose the job, okay? Now, on the bus that we took up from Mobile to go to Montgomery, we had at least 10 or 12 people from Airbus who were in this position, okay? A couple from Austell, and one lady who has been with us now since August when she spoke against the mask mandate at the school board meeting on the 19th of August. She lost her job as a dental hygienist. Okay? So this isn't make-believe. This isn't speculative, you know, what if and all like that. No. It's real time. What are they doing to help these people?
The governor says it's a legal matter. She has stated she's against the mandate,
right.
And the attorney general has filed a lawsuit, has he not?
Yeah, well, he's supported some lawsuits going on. Oh, that's all fine and dandy, but notice what she did in her executive order. Actually, what she didn't do in her executive order, she didn't apply it broadly to the rest of the people in the state. She only applied it to those people working in the executive branch of the government, the Alabama government. Now, her people are not going to be firing their folks for this, okay? And if they tried to, then they would bump up against the executive order. So that was a nothing burger, Lori. Nothing. That's not where the issue is.
Can she
an
executive order?
She could
order
do like Governor Abbott or Governor DeSantis. She could do things like that, okay? But she isn't. So the question is, why? And of course, as our friend Ann Eubank always says, follow the money. Well, who are Ivy's big supporters? None other than the BCA and all the rest of these business groups that have funded her, kept her, and the BCA doesn't want any kind of vaccine mandate prohibiting people from being able to fight against being laid off because of no jab, okay? So right there, whose responsibility is it now? It falls on the laps of the legislators to run with the ball to protect their people. Sorry if I'm getting a little excited about it, but the fact of the matter is the governor threw the legislators under the bus. So how are they reacting? Well, I mentioned this last week. We had HB 31, the Wharton bill, that's sitting in the House. Well, let me tell you what, folks. On Thursday, when we were up there, they gaveled in, and prior to the gaveling in, we some of us were in the House, some of us went to the Senate. I went to the House. All we saw in the House that morning, that afternoon, when they were getting ready to gavel in, was nothing more than yucking it up, slapping their backs, this good old boy BS, okay? There was no sense of urgency about what the hell was going on to the people who sent these idiots into the State House. No sense of it at all, okay? And my argument basically here is there better be a sense of urgency at some point if these people expect to just get reelected. It's ridiculous. I mean, so let's put it this way. We're running out of time, I know. So HB 31 in the House, we're pushing for that. But Senator Elliott brought forth SB 9, and Senator Orr brought SB 13. In our argument, in our view, SB 13 is a stronger bill. Senator Elliott's bill is something that really needs to be expanded. It does not offer any penalties. It only relates to COVID-19. We think it needs to be broadened to any kind of vaccine issue, okay? Thirdly, it talks about using the Bureau of Labor to try to come up with what? Ground rules. Okay, in 60 days. Okay, now, Lori, these folks are losing their jobs today, yesterday, a week ago, 3 weeks ago. Why turn something over to the Labor Department to make rules in 60 days? The crisis is now. I think that Senator Elliott's bill probably could be amended to make it more effective. But what's interesting, he had 19 co-sponsors. I'm not sure how many co-sponsors Senator Orr's bill has, but the fact of the matter is that there seems to be a movement to deal with this. So the real question is, and this is critical, and this is why we're asking people to call the Senate, their senators, and get on with this, okay? We've had action alerts all last week. We're going to have more this week, basically saying we want protection from our people. SB 9 and SB 13. Do what you have to do to fix these things so that we can protect our people now. We want it. It's a high bar, though. It takes 2/3 of the Senate to get this thing, those bills, into the session.
I have to ask a hypothetical question.
Sure.
Let's say one of these bills is passed that would make it illegal for an Alabama business to fire or let go of an employee for not getting the vaccine.
That's right.
How will that stand up against a federal mandate issued to things like the University of Alabama, the University of Auburn,
yeah,
tying federal contracts and federal money to that vaccine mandate?
Yeah.
How can a state law override the federal law?
Yeah, I mean, the question of preemption there is one that is interesting. It's more than likely going to be settled with some of these lawsuits at the national level, and I think we have to rely on that. Meanwhile, the Attorney General has already given guidance to the universities to liberally interpret the laws that are already there so that if a university employee doesn't want the mandate, go along with the idea that you've got religious or medical exemptions and apply that liberally, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay.
You've hit on the key issue, though, where you've got such an intermingling of federal money involved with all this that it is hard to disentangle all of that. So we have to see how all this is going to play out in the courts. But the reality is that where federal money is not necessarily involved, we may very well be on very firm grounds with a law that protects our employees. So there it is.
Very good.
Well, once again, Lori, I have run over time. Thank you again. Listen, folks, Common Sense Campaign and the Health Freedom for Alabama are working together to try to make these things happen. So go to our website, commonsensecampaign.org, and take a look at what's going on.
And healthfreedomalabama.com.
Okay, healthfreedomalabama.com. Take a look at what's going on and join the fight. This is a fight we can win if we are united and do what we're supposed to do, okay? So until next week, y'all take care. Have a great week. God bless. Au revoir.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. You can hear this program later in its entirety at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.